I'm doing a podcast, Dizzy.
Welcome to the Too Cool for School podcast. I'm your host, Yannick, and on today's episode, we are talking about experiences of two former teachers and why they left teaching. So if you'd just like to introduce yourselves.
My name is Eniola Rowley, and I used to teach in a school in Outer London. Yeah.
Great stuff.
My name is Dami Odushote, and I used to teach in the Borough of Greenwich.
Okay, great stuff. What did you guys teach?
I taught business studies and ICT.
Okay, and for how long?
For 2 years, so year 7 to year 13, both subjects.
Okay. And I taught maths and I was ahead of year. My total career was 5 years, just about 5 years. Yeah. And I was head of year for maybe 2.5 years.
Okay, great stuff. So before we get into the crux of why you left teaching, what do you miss most about teaching?
The students. I miss the students so much. I feel like I'll have a memory and I'll randomly say, oh yeah, my kids used to do this, or my kids this, or my kids that. Like, I still refer to them as my kids. So definitely the students. They were incredible.
Yeah, same. I miss the students. I miss some of their parents.
Yeah.
I miss some of their parents are my aunties.
Literally.
I miss some of my colleagues as well.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But ultimately, the students, maximum.
More
yeah.
than anything. My colleagues, like similar to Sammy, my colleagues as well, I think we had, the team that I taught in was just incredible. Like it was six of us, I think. And we had like the lead of our team. She was like literally like a big mummy to everyone. She was the best. She was literally the best. So yeah, my colleagues, but more than anything, the students.
So not the teaching.
I mean,
to me, the teaching wasn't the best part of the job. I feel like it got me to the best part of the job, which was the students.
Okay.
But not my passion, and that's just me. My passion was not imparting the knowledge of maths onto them. I feel like it was the things that came from that. It was the relationship that I got to build with them. It was getting to see their character, how they're growing as a person, how they're learning. Yeah, like yeah. aside from the content that I'm teaching them, just how this person learns and how they understand things, how they relate to how I'm talking to them or how they like to be spoken to. So I feel like those are the things that come with teaching
maths.
But that's not, I don't really miss teaching. No.
I think I miss teaching A-level to year 12 and 13. I feel like I really enjoyed that simply because I enjoyed business studies as a subject, as a student, but then also teaching it was fun because it was relevant. And I tried to make it relevant and it was nice to see them, similar to Dami again, nice to see them like improving from not knowing how to answer a 12 marker to getting 12 out of 12 on a 12 marker.
Yeah. So when you reflect on your first year of teaching in comparison to your last year of teaching, what are the main sort of differences if you compare your first year and your last year?
I'll go first. I only taught for 2 years, right? But my first and my last year were very different. I think in my first year, I was super naive. Like as an individual, I'm like quite empathetic. So I think that really got me in my first year of teaching, working with some of the kids that I worked with. But then also teaching, I managed to be a form tutor. So I was a form tutor in my first year. And I also taught through the whole school. So year 7 to year 13 within my first year, that was really, really big. And I think understanding just the dynamic of what education is and how schools work, I assumed like school teaching was going to be what I saw my teachers do when I was in secondary school, when I was in sixth form, and I loved those experiences. So I thought I was going into it with like, oh my gosh, so much joy. I'm going to love this. They beat me up in that first year. What? They beat me up in that first year. But by the second year, it's like, I've learned the game. So me too, do you get it? Me too. I can play the game well. So yeah, very different individual. Very, very different individual. Yeah. What about you?
Same. If I think of my first year, I even said in my leaving speech that I'm not the same person that I was when I entered this school. I feel like maybe because I was so comfortable at the point where I left, like with the students, there's not a student that I was thinking like just going back and forth with my words. When I first started, you know, there's some students that are looking a bit intimidating or they're scared. So you have to sort them out. But by the time I was leaving, it's like, I felt like There's no one that can scare me here. Sure. I feel like my confidence was incredibly different, like from when I started, obviously, to when I finished. I also felt like the purpose behind why I was doing what I was doing grew more and more every year. So there was a lot more passion, and I really understood why I was doing what I was doing. And that came from obviously knowing the students, knowing how something, an interaction with a teacher can have such an impact on them as well.
100.
I don't know. I feel like as a person, I grew so much in ways that I never would have expected when I entered teaching. And for that, like even just being bold enough to confront situations that usually on a normal day, I'll be thinking, that's not my business. But when I was in the school, I was thinking, everything is my business because it concerns these students. And then ultimately, this could be a story that in 20 years time, they look back and say that this happened.
This moment changed my life for sure.
Like sometimes I say that this one day, this something happened in school. And I just feel like I was part of those days for a lot of students.
Because everyone has that one teacher, that one or two teacher that you remember from school and you think, actually, do you know what? They did something.
Yeah.
You know, they pushed me. And I always wanted to be that teacher for other students. And I think similarly to what you guys have said, like my first year experience, you know, I had a sense of, it was like imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm 26 years old. I'm ahead of year. It's like, you've got these teachers that are 50,
seasoned
60,
in the game.
Looking at you seasoned and thinking, you don't know nothing. And you've got the kids that you're closer to them than you are some of the teachers. You think, you know, that's my friend. So when you actually have to discipline them, it's a 100%, bit like, oh, you know, you're doing me dirty. But at the end of it, at the end of the 5 years, I think, like you said, Dami, just that big sense of confidence. I felt sort of, you know, confidence in myself and in what I was able to deliver and in what I was able to do for the students, essentially giving myself that sense of that sense of value. So that's good to hear. When did it hit you and you said, you know what, I'm done? When was your I'm done moment?
I think when I realized that, like, the only reason I'm here is for the kids. Like there was no love, I feel like, for me anyway. There was no love for the job. Like there was actually no love for teaching. I think it became burdensome more than it was enjoyable. And obviously you're not going to enjoy every single day of your job, right? But I think that there has to be this sense of enjoying it. And I think when you know that, I don't know, like, because I feel like, could I have stayed? Possibly. Like, did I have more to give? Absolutely, right? Because I loved these children. Like, I really cared about them. However, when it's hitting you mentally, when it's hitting you, like, physically, when it's genuinely draining you, there's no joy in it anymore. Like, I feel like it will get to a point where what you're actually giving out is not as beneficial as it could be. And I think that's when I said, yeah, man, got to bow out so much.
Yeah. I think similar to you, I'm such an empath. And I feel like when I stepped into the pastoral role, whilst also teaching maths, it was a lot for me emotionally, like, and on my mental health. And I don't feel like there was a lot to manage that. So where I want to help this person to like the maximum, I felt like it started affecting my mental health. Like I'm now getting anxious because I have 240 students, boys at that are going through puberty and their families. And it's like, there's traumatic things happening in their lives that I feel like is my responsibility.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was very heavy, as much as like I wasn't single-handedly responsible for their lives. I felt like, as the weeks went on, it got heavier and heavier, and it didn't seem like there was any stress being released at any point. It just felt like this thing was just getting harder. This thing was just getting heavier. I feel like teaching it itself is a hard job by itself.
Full stop.
I feel like it's a hard job, and I commend anyone that does it, that has done it, that will do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, I wasn't prepared for the emotional stress and the toll that it took on my mental health. I feel like that was the first time I met anxiety. Yeah. Like working in a school, I wasn't not really an anxious person, but I met it there. Like
I think there's also like there's the weight of what you feel for these students, right? But then there's also the barrier in that, like, there's only so much you can do because it's outside of your remit. Like, you're not the social worker, you're not the police, and you're also not their parents. Like, there are systems in place to support these children. But when you see that these systems that are in place are at, like, full capacity, so they're not even supporting the children the way you feel like they should, they deserve support. Mm-hmm, I think that also adds to the stress, to the anxiety, to the fact that you feel helpless. It's like, I really want to help you, but I can't because this is the boundary, right? This is the boundary that I've been met with, but then no one else is supporting you the way I feel like you deserve to be supported. And that's just not one child. That's, as Dami said, that's maybe 240, or that's like five in your form class, or 30 in the whole of your class. And then you have students that you actually don't teach. Like, I wasn't a head of year, but I was a form tutor and I taught across the school. But then I had students that I actually just didn't teach, that would see myself or my classroom as a safe haven and would say all these different things. And it's like, there's only so much I can do. Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel helpless, and it's not nice, unfortunately.
You know, Dami, going back to what you were saying, and it's made me really reflect, because I was, I was pastoral head of year non-teaching for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to oversee 2-year groups of, you know, how many students.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also that added knowledge of being part of an inclusion team, that you get information about all the students.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was taking a lot in.
Yeah.
And, you know, from listening to you, I've realized that actually I was stressed.
Yeah.
That was stress. That mm-hmm. was stressful. That was overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listening to all of those, you know, things, trying to be, a protective factor
mm-hmm.
for all of those young people and the students that, you know, we work with, that they were going through things.
Yeah.
You know, they were going through things, and I didn't realize, you know, until you sort of discussed it and mentioned it, how much of an impact that was having, mm-hmm. you know, on me.
Yeah.
And then you have to do the parents' evening, and you have to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we even look at it culturally, you know, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. added thing of a black parent
coming
mm-hmm.
and saying to you, "Sir, look after my son."
Yeah.
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 It's like,
I'm
just responsibility.
Now you've added, you know, like, we used to have a saying in my school, in loco parentis, so in place of parents.
Mm.
But some of these parents were taking it literally, like, no, you are me in and outside of the school. Yeah. You know, it was, oh, my son's not doing this at home. What's that got to do with me? Are at home now.
Mm.
But it's that, you know, added pressure that was interesting. And I think, and just before we move on, for me, the I'm done moment, and I want to hear from you both about your experiences of COVID. Oh. My I'm done moment was COVID.
Mm.
I was non-teaching. What was I doing during COVID?
Mm.
Like, these kids aren't answering their phone. The parents aren't answering the phones. You know, the school wasn't prepared for that. We didn't have, like, work mobile phones, having to call people on private numbers. People aren't. And my thing was the going around, checking in, coming to my meeting room. Let's have a interventions.
Yeah. Let's face it.
So that whole period of COVID, I was like, at least the teachers are on Google Classroom doing something.
Yeah.
I just felt, you know what? I'm useless. And that was the first time in the role after like 3 years where it was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm nothing in this moment.
Interesting.
So what was your experiences of COVID?
So I actually started the year before, just before COVID. So it was my training year. So when COVID came, I was just thinking, yeah, I can do my assignments. do you know what I mean? And I feel like at that point, I was actually teaching alone. So I had a few classes online. It's not like school where you have 6 periods a day.
Yeah.
I had a few classes online, maybe once a day or not so often. Anyway, particularly in 2020 when they were just figuring it out.
Mm.
It was the first time. So I feel like my real teaching experience came into swing after COVID, just because it was my training year before. I was just sort of finding my feet, and then COVID came. I feel like COVID probably emphasized, or like, can I say exacerbated?
Yeah.
That's a great, not exaggerated, but I feel like it brought to light a lot of issues that the students were going through from the pastoral team. And that's what I found out, obviously, at a later point when I joined the pastoral team. Like, you find out that during COVID, I don't know.
People aren't eating,
or people are dependent on the school for food, people are being made homeless, like so many different things.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what came to light. And to me, that's more where my drive and my passion came from.
I think for me, I've actually never thought about what COVID was like for like pastoral teams that were literally non-teaching. I started September 2020. So by 2021, I think we were in lockdown teaching during COVID. It was like, okay, we're going to make this work, or we have to make this work, right? But I think when January came and they said, you know what, everyone's going to be in lockdown, that made me realize how important teachers are. Like, forget just teachers, but every single person that works within a school. Because I think the dependency was on teachers were crazy, because teachers still had to, some teachers had to go to school regardless, like especially those in like senior leadership, they actually had to go to school like during COVID and during things like that. And I think COVID just made me realize that, yeah, like the world actually revolves to a certain degree around teachers. Like people need the teaching team to do what they do.
The education system, the school as a whole.
Exactly. You have parents who are with their kids for the first time in forever. I say all the time, like, what we've got 52 weeks within a year, for at least 36, maybe 35 of those weeks, children are in schools kind of thing. And they're spending what, nine to three, nine to four in those schools. But you had their parents, but they were with their parents during that COVID period. And it was just really interesting. It just made me realize how important the education system is, as opposed to sort of like pushing me away, especially because I had just started. But I think the aftermath of COVID is what made me realize that, yeah, the government need to do something, or the education system is going to be in tatters. Because you have students that are coming into year seven by virtue of COVID that have reading ages of 5, 6. But this is a 10-year-old and 11-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing happening to support these kids because those in power have misplaced priorities. I think post-COVID made me realize, yeah, there's a problem. Like, there's a problem that teachers can't solve alone.
And we're still reaping the impacts of
absolutely.
And I don't think we'll ever stop. COVID shook the world.
It definitely did. I think for those, you're right, to be fair, because even if you think about primary school kids, right? Unless your child isn't necessarily in education right now, maybe they're okay. But like from at least year three and above, we are definitely still reaping the impact of COVID.
Going back to teaching,
yeah.
What state were you in mentally in your final year of teaching? So it's your final year. What state were you going to mentally?
I was finished. I wasn't even myself. Like, I was not myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was done. I should have left before.
So. Yeah.
Because I should have left before because I just wasn't giving my best to the students in terms of I was short. I was snappy.
Yeah.
And I'm not usually snappy.
Sick days
I don't take sick days, by the way.
Don't take sick days in her Dami took sick days.
Killing off those sick
days. Dami took sick. Because Dami was sick. And like she was.
It was sick days.
It's like, I don't really get sick, to be honest.
Best of me.
In my final year, yeah, it was a lot. Like I was off sick. Like, even there was a time that I remember one of my line leaders said to me, go and get a sick note. Like, just get off work. Just get off work. And I feel like I was even annoying myself because I wasn't being so patient with the students. And usually that's my trait. Mrs. Patient. But it's like, if you're to ask them of the final year, I don't think they'll say that about me anymore. Like, I'm acting irrational. And it's like, why am I doing that? You know those jarring teachers. I don't want to be those. Seriously. So I just had to quit while I was ahead. But like, yeah. But it's so funny because it's like the students know me. There was even a time that I remember I was telling 1 year 7 off. I don't know what he was doing. Just being annoying. But then one of my year 10s, at a point I was head of year 10, and my year 10 said, don't annoy Miss, you know, obviously they use words they shouldn't use, but it said, don't annoy Miss, you know, she's not in a good mood right now in this week.
Wow.
And I just thought.
So your colleagues were seeing it, but the students were seeing it.
But I feel like where I had a good relationship with the students, and I could say that you guys are annoying me because of, you're acting like this and you shouldn't be. Mm. Like, and we could have proper conversations about like what they want to do after, what their fears are, how annoying school is for them, what they want to get out of being in school. I feel like it was almost like when I was being the jarring teacher, it was okay for me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they weren't thinking, well, maybe some students were, but ultimately for the most part, it was okay.
Mm.
But I feel like, again, that's because of the relationship I got to build with them. Yeah.
I remember in my last year of teaching, I had a meeting with my head teacher. And the meeting was about how many sick days I'd taken, because it was sort of like a cause for concern. They were like, oh, like, can you provide evidence for the days that you had taken off? Wow. And it was so funny because, like, how do you provide evidence for, like, my immune system is not as good as Dami's. So I'd be getting sick, especially when I'm stressed, right? Mm. So it's like, how do I provide evidence for the moments where I'm sick by virtue of being stressed? Like, I don't have a cold. I don't necessarily have a migraine, but because of the weight of what's being required of me, I'm actually now ill kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially towards like the latter part, like let's say maybe May, they knew I had tapped like that button, I tapped out. So they were doing things to try and say, like, you know, allow me to do things with the kids, like things they wouldn't allow me to do in general, like, oh, take them on a trip or do this or do that, sort of like incentivize me to stay.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, similar to Dami, like the kids would observe, because the kids are super observant. My form class especially, it's like usually I'm a player Wordle with them.
Yeah.
There's no Wordle today because I'm tired, guys. And it's like, oh, miss, are we not going to? No, sit down and read your book in silence. Because I don't have capacity. I don't have capacity to entertain you the way I would love to entertain you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't have capacity to sacrifice for the most, because teaching is sacrificial, right? I don't have capacity to sacrifice the way I want to sacrifice because I'm tired.
Yeah.
And like where I taught was quite far from my house as well. So it was just.
Travel.
Yo.
Travel was a killer.
It was just, it was much, man. It was much. It was much.
And you mentioned not being able to sort of, not being able to detail to like your head of year, to your head teacher or the senior leadership team. Actually, what is it that is making you physically ill? Do you feel like you couldn't have just said to your head teacher, actually, this job is stressing me out?
I don't think so. I don't think I could, because you won't get it. Do you get what I mean? You won't. He was a white man, probably like in his like late 30s, maybe early 40s. You won't get it because you don't see me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like maybe my head of department would have, because she was a black woman, Nigerian, in her 50s. She sees me. She would understand because we're sharing the same, like we're singing from the same book, same hymn book, right? What his expectations of a teacher is probably not what we were given and we were doing, again, simply because they see us as that person that sees them, right? You have parents. I remember a parent called my phone and she was like, literally like crying and talking about her child. And it's just like, auntie. And it's like, I got in trouble for calling her auntie.
Oh, wow.
I got in trouble for calling her auntie. She was like, oh, one of the VP was like, oh, that's too familiar or something like that. I'm saying, she was like, I understand, you know, that's what you do, where you come from, et cetera, but like, that's too familiar. And I'm thinking, sorry, I have to respect my elders, but like, do you know what I mean? I called her auntie just so like, she knew that I was seeing her kind of thing. And I was understanding where she was coming from, but for sure I could never go and say, hey, sir, like this is what's happening, like Mr. X kind of thing, because you just don't get it. And I think from the point where you don't get it, it's going to be miscommunication. We're not going to see eye to eye. You don't get me. You don't get what I give to the students, or what the students require of me. And there was like no point.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I feel like unlike any, I was able to say it, that this is this job, by the way, nothing else, everything else is all right. Like sometimes I'll try and say like, is anything happening at home or different stuff? No, it's all in this school. I was able to say that. But honestly, I feel like it was beyond repair.
Mm.
Like it's like, oh, this person can help you with this admin task or why didn't you tell this person to do this? But I feel like it's beyond that, because we're dealing with people who are not a size and who, 100%. Like, you can't predict what is going to go, what's going to happen tomorrow with this student. And you can't predict how I'm going to, like, deal with that. Yeah. And I feel like the reason why I say it's a bigger issue than that, because as much as I left, the people in the team are just as stressed. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when I'm catching up with my colleagues and with my friends that are still working there, it's not getting better. If anything, it feels like it's getting worse. And I feel like, oh, you know, I've dodged a bullet. Like, thank God that I've left. As much as I do miss the students, and I do miss, like, little stuff.
Yeah.
But I just feel like it feels like tear it all down and start again in order to save this.
Yeah. For sure.
No, thank you for sharing. I feel like, for me, when I left, I think the one word that sticks with me is devalued. You know, I didn't feel valued. I remember having a conversation with my head teacher and giving him a proposal of, you know, additional responsibilities that I wanted in the school and, like, an increase in salary. And it wasn't even crazy what I was asking. And it was just, like, rebuffed. It wasn't, you know, really taken seriously. And I thought, you know what? Like, my 5 years, I felt like the 5 years that I'd done in that school was like 10 years worth of work.
That's literally what it is.
If you saw me in that school, I felt like I was the guy, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all my suits were from Next, minimum £100. I just wanted to, like, feel good, look good and just be that guy. And, you know, that wasn't respected. And I remember the whole year just thinking, no, they don't rate me here, you know. They don't rate me. Mm. And I started looking elsewhere. And when I moved on to a different role, still within education, but more focused on, like, consultancy, and I looked at what I was being offered in terms of salary and, like, the flexibility of the role, hiring, etc., I thought to myself that I was willing to stay at the school for less money and for more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But just that feeling of, you know what, you don't value me.
Mm.
You don't value what I've brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that was, you know, that was a big, big turning point for me. We've spoken a bit about stress. We've spoken a bit about our mental well-being. When you were both working teaching, what sort of things did, like, your school put in place to prioritize the well-being of not only yourself, but of your colleagues as well?
Pizza.
I feel like, so for the pastoral team,
pizza's been saving lives for a long time.
Pizza.
For the pastoral team in the school I was working with, there was actually, like, what did they call it? For lack of better words, I don't know what it's called. Supervision. They called it supervision. And essentially it is another professional, an external professional. She's not a counsellor, but she'll come and speak to you, essentially. So you'll discuss... Perhaps you can discuss anything with her. And that was, like, once a month. That was once a month. So they did do that, but it felt more like a tick box, like exercise. To me, it just felt like one more thing that I had to do. I guess I didn't find it so helpful. Maybe if it was helpful, I would feel like, oh, this is helping. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But to me, I didn't find it so helpful.
I feel you. I think for the most part, the things that they, the maybe the training this or the this that or the whatever it is that they try to use as, like, a tool to help, tend to be administrative. So it's like, oh, this is, like you said, Dami, like, this is one more thing to do on my already long to-do list, as opposed to, oh my gosh, like, this is really, really helping me. Obviously, I taught in an academy, so they were able to choose, we were able to maybe have, like, a 2 week extra off or, like, a 2 weeks instead of 1 week. But then even within that week, those 2 weeks, you're still planning. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, like, nothing ever really, and yes, I wasn't ahead of year, but I think for the most part, it was the same for, like, all teachers. Nothing really helped because you're not really, 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 really doing anything that is supporting teachers, that is reducing and alleviating the workload.
And I feel like,
no,
I don't know, obviously, I don't know their motivations behind certain interventions that they put But I feel like a lot of the times it's like a tick box to say that we did offer you this, or to say that we did, like, we had a social on this day, or do you get what I'm saying? Or we bought pizza and that was the time for you to de-stress. I feel like it's not, it, those things don't just, don't solve the solution. You still go back to your very stressful job and you have the same issues.
Yeah.
So as much as, like, yeah, the attempts are great, I just don't think they're really, they're so helpful.
Yeah, they're not effective, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So describe the process when you handed in your resignation. Was it letter? Was it email? Was it face-to-face? Like, how was it?
I think I, I remember writing it. I wrote it in school, actually, I believe. I remember writing it, wrote it with one of my colleagues, and we were just like...
You wrote it with them?
Yeah.
Together?
No, like, he was just in the room, just happened to be in the room. I was just like, yeah, I'm writing this. And I didn't hand it in straight away. I spoke to my head of department.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a really tough conversation because, again, like I said, she is incredible. And we were literally a formidable force. Like, everybody wanted to study business.
Yeah.
Everybody loved us. We were like majority Black kind of thing, young as well. It was amazing. I spoke to her about it. And I think the beautiful thing, most encouraging thing, even though she wanted us to stay, she understood that we had our own lives to live, and she understood the weight of the role and the job and how much it was and how tasking it was for every single person. So like we hugged it out. We sort of like, you know, cried and laughed and whatever. Yeah. Then I handed it to my head teacher and he was just like, okay. And I just thought, amazing, nice. And, you know, it was like, let's have this meeting. And then I said, had a meeting. I still had the same sentiment. And then I spoke to my executive, like VP, executive head teacher, sorry. So we had a head teacher, executive head teacher, spoke to him, and, you know, he was like, you know, you're not gonna make as much if you leave the role, like, very much like a, and I was just like, thank you.
That's nasty from him.
That's like, how much does he think he's paying?
Like, you know, I mean, you're gonna have to stop at the beginning. I said, you don't know, my God, please. But yeah, all of that stuff, kind of like, just like I said, like, they were allowing me to do certain things that they probably wouldn't have done,
yeah,
to sort of like keep me and help make me stay and stuff. But I was quite adamant that, you know, like, it was time. Telling the kids was hard. I feel like telling the kids was harder than telling any teacher because, yeah, it was so sad. It was so sad.
So sad. I wrote my resignation well before letter, email, well before I sent it. I don't remember when I wrote it, but I actually saw a screenshot of it not long ago.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wow, I wrote this very early in comparison to when I sent it. But yeah, it was really sad sending it. But mine was going into the new, I sent it the 1st of January, going into the new year. And that's how you know I was just over it, because I didn't even wait for the, you know, usually they send resignation on the last day of term.
Yeah.
I just said, if I didn't send this now, I even scheduled it so that it went. It definitely got delivered. So obviously we got back from the Christmas holidays, and then the head teacher just said to me, this is really sad. I think we should have a meeting. We had many, many, many meetings. Ultimately, I feel like these meetings, they're just saying that I'm so good. The students loved me. What did they say? They said that maybe I could do my role with someone else. Two of us will be doing it together.
So they were trying to find ways
Jackie?
To keep you.
Then. For sure.
Yeah, they were trying to find ways to keep me. Yeah, but sorry. But like, you know, I just feel like the issue at hand is not going to be resolved with the things that they were telling me.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time that I'm telling you these things as well.
Mm.
It's just that you're trying to pull things out the bag now because I've said that, you know what, I'm serious, I can't take this.
Yeah.
I was, from the very first week that I noticed that this is too much, I went to go and say it because I was getting anxious to the point that I'm waking up at 4 a.m. I'm doing emails, I'm thinking, is this student all right? I'm not sleeping properly. So when I'm doing all of that, that's where I'm going to say that, hi, this is a lot, by the way, this is a lot. I still have my GCSE classes. I need to give, and it got to a point that I'm not even giving my best to my academic classes
yes.
because of things to me that are more pressing.
100.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? I want to be able to be teaching someone and I've planned this lesson. I know exactly what I'm doing. But I'm doing things unprepared because to me, other things are taking priority.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had many a meetings. They said that, well, when I want to come back, I can come back. I like them for that, but I'm not coming back. But yeah.
You know, you spoke about the students and I remember assembly. Actually, before that, I remember speaking to the head teacher and the head teacher said, oh, can you not tell them yet? Can you wait a bit? And I thought, you know what? They did this with someone else and the kids just ended up having like an early, because I think at the time I was head of year 11 and the kids ended up leaving early.
Oh, so
I said, yeah, don't worry, we can leave it 2 weeks. That same assembly, like, guys, I'm out of here. They couldn't believe it. And and I could see like the senior leaders at the back, like, this wasn't what we needed. But I said, I'm leaving. I can't, I need them to know. And that was difficult because I look back and I keep all of like my cards and and like those certain cards where, and it's the kids that you don't expect.
100%.
You know, there's the kids that you literally been carrying them on your back. And then there's the ones that you've done maybe one or two gestures for.
And then
the letters are deep and I'm like,
yeah, man.
Oh, where did this come from?
Yeah.
I can see how telling the kids as well after handing in that resignation letter.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Is there anything that could have kept you guys for another year, one more year, anything?
I think genuinely the kids, so I left when a group of kids that I had were in year 10. And honestly, maybe if the school wasn't so far, but also like I would have stayed for them. I would have stayed for them like that group of year 10s to finish year 11. Like that's
the okay. So you left them in year 10.
I left them in year 10. I left them and we were trying with them, man. And they were an incredible bunch, a difficult bunch, but an incredible bunch. But again, like I saw them, right? And it was okay, cool. Let's keep you on a straight and narrow, hopefully until year 11, like you finish year 11 strong, et cetera, et cetera. I think possibly that's the only thing that could have kept me. I finished with my year 13s.
What would have kept you, sorry?
My group of boys, the ones that I took to the theatre, like those lot, literally. What about you? Your year group.
So is your question, is there anything that the school could have offered me to stay for 1 year?
Is there anything that could have kept you?
I actually think maybe 100K. But even that, I might have wanted to off myself in that year. Seriously. But I really feel like I exhausted everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really feel like they're not going to give me 100K to do that.
Of course.
Yeah. So ultimately, I feel like no.
Yeah. Okay.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's.
And looking back, is teaching what you thought it would be?
For me, I did teach first. So I was teaching and studying at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I knew that I was going to be like a full-time student, full-time teacher, I don't think I understood, and I obviously understand Teach First mission and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think I understood it to that extent. I don't think, again, like I said, like I thoroughly enjoyed my secondary school and my sixth form days. Like those were some really good times, good days, great teachers. And I feel like whilst I was teaching, like I tried to like do what they were doing, like, mm-hmm. or just be half as good as them, because some of them were really, really stand out. But I feel like it was made difficult by the systems in place. Mm-hmm. I think working in an academy, and just how education is right now, I think it definitely wasn't what I thought it would be,
mm-hmm.
simply because of how different everything is. So yeah, it definitely wasn't, but I feel like I still enjoyed it. Like I still liked it. I loved it for what it was.
Mm. I don't think I had much expectations of it, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I feel like I was pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I say that with a pinch of salt. Like, yeah, like the opportunities that came from it, how much I got to grow, how much I realized, oh, I really like people. Yeah, I really like, yeah. I really like students. I really see students.
Yeah.
I guess my teaching experience didn't go the way I thought it would go.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was shorter than I thought.
Same.
And did you guys have like alternative career paths? Plan, like, did you have jobs waiting, or you just thought, you know what, this is the end of the line for me here?
No.
I don't even have anything set up, but I just can't continue teaching.
No, even when my like head teachers, like the executive said, you know, you're gonna have to start again. I said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I will happily start again. I just gotta get out of this place.
Yeah.
So no. But I don't think I had really, really started thinking about what I wanted to do post leaving teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The first step was just get out of that door.
Bro.
And then, do you get what I mean? We'll figure it out.
I feel like the same. I just left. But when you're a teacher, you begin to see that you can do so many things, because there are things that are not in your job role, or the things that I was doing, I was thinking, I'm quite smart, you know, I can do these things. So I feel like that was never really a fear of mine.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think... Not to be cocky, but I feel like I can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I feel like you can tell me to do something and I'll do it well, or I can learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's something that teaching gave me as well. There's things that I was not familiar with that I had to do. So, yeah.
For sure. You pick up the best skills as a teacher, because you have to be so dynamic as an individual.
So you're both Black teachers. Representation matters.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
What impact do you think it has on, you know, the education system for Black students, for example,
mm-hmm.
when they're seeing Black teachers leaving the profession, or for upcoming teachers, NQTs, people mm-hmm. that are doing, you know, teaching first, etc., when they're seeing Black teachers leave the profession?
Fortunately, right, not all Black teachers are leaving. So like thanks for that. In that when I left, maybe my school in particular, there were a few of us that left, maybe three or four, but then there were still a few people there. And also like in the same breath, a lot of people are still going into teaching. And I thank God for that, because like you said, representation definitely matters. That the thing that made us excellent teachers, in as much as, you know, we were gifted and skilled and all of these different things, was the fact that we saw these students, right? Like we saw them for who they were, and they could relate to us.
Mm.
Even though we had to discipline them, we also loved on them in the way that they didn't get to receive love from other teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's tough. Like they probably see it and they probably think, oh, like Miss, why do you have to leave, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I guess in the same breath, I'm grateful that, you know, we're not all leaving in masses. Like there are still some people riding the wave,
yeah.
you know, rooting for them from the back, riding the wave, and those that are still to join said wave. So yeah.
Yeah. I feel, going off of that, I feel like my school had Black teachers. They weren't short of seeing Black people in SLT, Black people in the pastoral team.
Yeah.
They weren't short of seeing Black teachers. But I would say you can do one thing and it can mean two things to two people. So for example, I remember I was now saying to you, one of my students said to me that, thank you, like, well done, Miss. Thank you, Miss. Like, when I leave this place, I'm going to live my dreams as well.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, that's a nice way to see it. Whereas to another person, it's like, I'm building them up and letting them down. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I just feel like you can't be all things to all people.
So,
I feel like representation is really important. I feel like it's important for the students to be seen. And I feel like Black teachers are important. And I feel like if you can find a healthy environment and a healthy school where you can exist there and exist well and 100%. Give your best well.
Yeah. 100%.
And if I did, I think I would still be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. And I didn't have a healthy environment. I didn't have those things, which is why I had to leave.
Teacher retention in the UK
mm-hmm.
is at a low.
It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teachers are leaving in masses. What do you guys think can be done to improve this?
I mean, I just don't think teaching is sustainable, to be very honest. Like, and we can look at it from different perspectives. We can look at it from like the economical perspective, in that living generally in London, in the UK, is so hard. And when we look at teachers' salaries, they don't necessarily, like, they haven't increased for a while, kind of thing. They haven't been consistent in what certain teachers have been getting paid. Out of London pay being very different to inner London pay, yet you're still doing, like, the same job, like the requirements are still the same. It makes it hard for some people to live. And I think there's that aspect of it not being sustainable. But then in the same breath, there's also the fact that teaching is actually hard, in my opinion. Like, teaching's hard. Teaching's so hard because there's so much admin that is required from you that you fail to be a good teacher in your specific subject, especially if you're like just teaching, not solely doing pastoral stuff. And I think even from the pastoral aspect, you're limited in what you can do because you don't receive the support that you want, because you understand what the students need, right? You see them, they speak to you about these things, yet the systems aren't in place to support you to do what you want to do. So as a teacher, as a pastoral lead, you're not receiving the support you want. You don't have the resources that you need. Some schools are lacking literally in excellent resources to be good teachers. Mm-hmm. Students don't have opportunities. Like, where are the clubs? Where are the after school clubs? The things that can help teachers? I don't know, like, just be excellent and help students thrive the way they want to thrive. Like we said, like, being a teacher, you have to be a social worker too. You have to be this, you have to be a parent, you have to be all these different things. That is exhausting. And I think, yeah, man, like, it's just not sustainable because, again, those at the top aren't doing what they need to do to ensure that teachers have what they need, have all they need.
What do you think?
It's difficult. It's difficult. I think the dynamic of education is, you know, changing now. You know, you've got multi-academy trusts coming in, you know, and, you know, certain schools, you know, are losing their ethos, are losing their values. And I think we need to sort of go back and like reevaluate and ask ourselves, actually, in this new century, in this new, you know, time that we are living in, what is education for? What is the purpose of education?
Yeah.
Because this is a new structure that we're living in. Education wasn't like this, you know, before we had curriculums and whatever else. You just learn about life. It was art, it was poetry, it was music, it was just things of the world. But now we've got structures that have put curriculums and things in place of this is what we want you to learn.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. And people are sort of moving beyond that and saying, actually, do you know what? I want to be free. I want to be creative. I want to learn what I want to learn.
Agreed.
The generation, perhaps, that are becoming teachers now have less tolerance for toxic environments.
Yes.
Like, it's every other time that I'm here, that I'm meeting someone and they're saying they quit their job. They've had enough. And I feel like, that's why I just feel like tear it all down and start over, because it's too easy. It's too bad.
It's too bad.
Like, the stress is too high.
Yeah.
So I just feel like that's why people are leaving.
No, 100%.
Like, they're gonna do something else. They can go on TikTok and make money. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they can do things easier without the stress.
Yeah.
So why would they put themselves through that stress?
Yeah, no, thank you. Interesting insight. So we've got a new government, new education secretary. If you were able to speak to government now, what aspect of education would you get them to prioritise?
I feel like it works in tandem in that, like, we have to prioritise, like, housing and, like, living. And I think by virtue of prioritising that, it will help with education. I feel like for students or for teachers to be able to be good teachers, the home also needs to be good, right? To a certain degree. I think the home needs to be good, and we don't have good homes. We're talking about COVID and how people are being made homeless and this and that. It's like, I don't know.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs, isn't it?
Yeah, the physiological.
Let's get the basic, the fundamental.
I agree with you. Literally, that.
Yeah.
I think more than anything, though, in terms of, like, educational minister, let's sort out the pay for teachers You know, like you want teachers to strive. Let's sort out the pay. Let's ensure people are being paid fairly for the work that they are doing. And let's also reduce the administrative stuff that comes, especially by working in these academies, within teaching. Like, let's ensure that things to a certain degree are that there's like a structure and a template across all. Like, one academy shouldn't be able to do things a particular way and cause stress in a particular way compared to another academy, yeah. Right? But yeah, literally, that the it works in tandem. That the home needs to be good for education to be good, and we have to start there.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are so many things that affect students. For me, the way the students are really affected how I was. Mm. So, like, if their lives ultimately are in chaos and the systems that are in place for them, the social workers, whatever systems are in place for them are not working, I feel like that's where my stress came from. Yeah. Like, all these things are not working, so I'm stressed because I need them to work, sort of thing. And I want this child to be safe and to be thriving and to be happy and to be learning in a comfortable environment. So I think, yeah, it goes back to all those basic needs. Housing, it goes, but if I'm thinking about in school, like, sometimes there's just not enough resources.
Yes,
some students, they play up and they decide education is not for them because they haven't been given enough attention, mm. or because they haven't been taught the way that they need to be suitable be taught to them, yeah. They haven't been looked at and seen that, you know what, this child actually is autistic, and like, those things are not pointed out sometimes until later. People after uni are finding out, oh, I had a neurodiverse thing. Yeah, they could have been getting help from when they're in school. And I feel like missing those things is incredibly ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you've been in education for 100%. 18 years of your life for the most part, and 21 if you decided to go to uni. These things need to have been picked up. Mm. It's not because you're going to work and you're not communicating properly with your thing that you should start questioning yourself. Yeah. And I feel like, yeah, there needs to be enough attention on each student, but there's not enough
resources to do that. Senko can't get, I remember randomly when I was teaching, I observed that one of my students, he definitely had like ADHD, and I said, you know, I need to put in like a form for him to get assessed. And they said he was in year 8 at that time. It wouldn't happen until the end of year 9. End of year 9, he needs to pick his GCSEs. Do you know what I mean? Things like that.
Yeah.
So literally back to the resources. Everyone is stretched.
Yeah.
So we need stretched funding thin. For stuff. Stretched, thin. Yeah.
And what would your advice be for any sort of upcoming NQTs, you know, anyone considering going into to teach, and what would your advice be for them?
Know your boundaries. Know your boundaries. Know what you can tolerate. Know what you can take, and stand firm by them.
Mm, that's very good. I was going to just say focus on today, which sounds so cheesy.
No,
but I feel like you can only deal with what's in front of you. And I feel like often, like, trying to think ahead or thinking back to the past, I feel like those are the things that might heighten stress. But if today you have this year 7 class, this year 11 class, and you need to plan, do those 3 things, and then everything else will come after.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main thing for me would be, like, control what you can control.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that I couldn't control, but the one thing that I could control was knowing that I was always going to give 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to call myself like the people's champion.
Mm.
Like, that was, mm-mm. I think, the people's champion,
yeah.
Best head of year.
Mm-hmm.
Until now, I can hands down say I don't think there's ever been a better head of year than me. That's the sort of I wouldn't even say arrogance, but confidence that I used to take into my role. And the final question for my guests: would you go back into teaching? Yes or no?
Yes.
I can't say anything else after.
Yes or no?
Yes. But I need to tell you this.
No, no, no. That's it.
I can't say it's anything.
No. So thank you very much for being a part of this episode. We appreciate you coming on. And this has been Too Cool for School podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then we encourage everyone to follow, subscribe, and connect with us on social media. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.